Well, police departments want the message out there that ecstasy is a dangerous drug. In Vancouver, a 22-year-old woman is dead after taking ecstasy at a house party this past weekend. But others say ecstasy can have its uses. Is that even possible? Well, let's ask Rick Doblin about that. Rick is the president and founder of the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies. Good afternoon, Rick.
Yes, thank you for having me here today.
Well, thanks for being on. First of all, tell me a bit about what your center does.
Well, we're a nonprofit organization, and our focus is developing what's called Schedule I drugs, like MDMA, LSD, and marijuana, into prescription medicines for use under controlled, careful circumstances.
And is this documented? Like, do you have research that shows that those drugs can be useful for that?
Yeah, we do, for a variety of things. I got my PhD from Harvard, from the Kennedy School of Government, and my focus was on the regulation of these drugs. And the FDA's attitude is that they're already approving a lot of different drugs that have an abuse potential. Pain drugs, anxiety drugs, drugs for attention deficit disorder, and that the risks of these drugs are no different than the risks of other drugs that they look at. And so they're willing to put science first when it comes to balancing risks and benefits.
And do you think that because these drugs didn't come through that particular pipeline, sort of the research, you know, the pharmaceutical pipeline, that they're not looked at?
Well, no, the reason that they're not looked at is more because they're not likely to make money for the pharmaceutical industry, because these are all drugs that are off patent, meaning that once we develop them into prescription medicines, we're not going to be having a monopoly on them. Anybody can market them. And where the regulations are going to come in will be who can prescribe them and under what conditions. So I heard the story, the introduction, the tragedy about this young woman who died from taking ecstasy over the weekend. And, you know, that's a terrible situation. And my questions would be, of course, what was actually in that drug? What we find is that MDMA, when given in therapeutic doses in controlled settings, doesn't seem to cause those kind of catastrophic conditions. And so then it's a question of, are there benefits? And we're working with people that have had chronic treatment-resistant post-traumatic stress disorder from soldiers from Iraq and Afghanistan, people who've had childhood sexual abuse, and we're finding remarkable evidence of success.
In what way? How does this drug work? What does it do for them?
Well, MDMA, you know, because we just mentioned that it's ecstasy, it's been the subject of research by governments all over the world into the risks of MDMA, into how it works. So there's over $300 million worth of studies that are in the scientific literature, over 3,500 papers published. And so what we know is that the amygdala, the portion of the brain where fear memories are encoded, the activity in the amygdala is reduced when people take MDMA. And then the prefrontal cortex, where people put things in context, the activity in that part of the brain is increased by MDMA. And so people are able to look at traumatic memories and not have their normal fear-based response that keeps them traumatized and keeps them unable to really move forward in their life. And they're able to look at what happened. Oftentimes, people can remember more of the trauma that they've ever been able to remember before, because the fear keeps their memory from opening up in that way.
Right.
And then they're able to put it into context where it's not everybody that, not every dark alley is scary, not every loud noise is a bomb. And then they can separate then and now, and then they're able to reduce the symptoms and often reduce associated drug abuse. People often with PTSD try to escape the pain, the emotional pain, with alcohol and other things. And then they can move forward into their lives.
So is this being used therapeutically?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We have a series of what are called phase two pilot studies that are small exploratory studies. We've completed one in the United States and published the results in the Journal of Psychopharmacology that showed that over 80% of the people that we treated that had PTSD an average of 20 years after two MDMA sessions no longer qualified for a diagnosis of PTSD. And we're just getting ready to publish a paper that tracks them after an average of 41 months. And we're showing that the benefits have sustained over time. And we've completed a study in Switzerland. We're starting a new study in Israel. We started a study, a small study in Spain years ago. And our hopes now are to start our study in Vancouver as soon as we can resolve the security issues for the storage of the MDMA with Health Canada.
Right, but we have to be clear here that what you're talking about is as ecstasy is slightly different because you know what's in it, whereas a lot of these drugs that people are buying and perhaps think is ecstasy isn't necessarily the same kind of drug.
That's exactly right. And in fact, the number eight employee of Microsoft was a donor to MAPS, and he gave us $100,000 to test ecstasy pills. And it turned out that over half of them were completely bogus and didn't even have any MDMA in them at all.
And so that is the active ingredient.
Yeah, I mean, ecstasy was supposed to be MDMA, and it should only have one thing in it. And, you know, we work with pharmaceutical-grade MDMA in our research, and the ecstasy that people buy on the streets is often adulterated and, as I said, many times has no MDMA in it at all.
But isn't that the concern that anybody should have when it comes to, even if you're so committed to buying drugs, you don't know what you're getting, and that's the concern the police have, right, is that you don't know what you're getting when you do this.
Yeah, but that's an intent, that's true, but that's a problem related to the war on drugs. That's not related to the drug MDMA. The impurities, the fact that you have people that will sell anything to make money, all of that wouldn't be the case if there was regulated markets.
Rick, do you have a hard time convincing people sometimes that you can take these active ingredients in drugs and put them to other uses?
Well, not really, because when I talk about pain, you know, I mean, heroin, the opiates, are used for pain control, and they're also widely abused. So the idea that drugs can have both recreational non-medical uses and at the same time have therapeutic medical uses, it's not that hard to explain to people. Cocaine is approved medicine. The opiates are approved medicine. Methamphetamine is an approved medicine. Cocaine is an approved medicine. So it's really not that hard to explain to people that it's the conditions under which a drug gets used that determine whether it's likely to have more benefits than risks, more than the drug itself.
Right. This is an ongoing discussion that we have when it comes to marijuana, too, isn't it?
Well, yeah, except the problem is with marijuana is that in the United States, the National Institute on Drug Abuse, the federal government, has a monopoly on the supply of marijuana, and they don't let you use it if you want to really look into making marijuana into a prescription medicine. We're suing the DEA right now to try to get our own production facility. So with psychedelics, because there's multiple producers that have been licensed by the DEA, we really just have to focus on working primarily with FDA to get them to approve the research. So the medical marijuana situation, research has been blocked for 40 years in a lot of different ways. And that's what's frustrating is in the United States, various states have made medical marijuana laws, but they've done it through political means, not science. And MAPS is trying to resolve the question about marijuana's medical uses through scientific research, but we're being blocked from doing so.
But that seems kind of odd. If you can study the medicinal uses for a drug like ecstasy, as you say, with the ingredient MMDA, why can't you do the same with marijuana?
Well, it's because of the historical quirks of the single convention that criminalized marijuana. And so the DEA is able to misinterpret the single convention to block multiple producers of marijuana in the United States. But in England, in the Netherlands, in Israel, elsewhere around the world, too, there are other countries that have permitted multiple private producers of marijuana, but the United States won't do that. And they're fearful that the research will actually show that there's benefits from marijuana. And that's not surprising, and that the ingredients of marijuana are already approved medicines.
So getting back to the ecstasy situation, then, you said you want to do a study in Vancouver. Is that right?
Yes. And again, I never use the word ecstasy to describe what we're trying to do.
No, you call it MMDA.
Well, MDMA.
MBMA.
MDMA.
Right.
Okay, so we've been trying for about 4 years to start a study in Vancouver. Health Canada has approved the protocol. The Institutional Review Board that protects the subjects has approved the protocol. And we've been over 2 years working with Health Canada just to come up with security arrangements for about 9 grams of MDMA worth less than $1,500. We've had to have a safe. Then the safe had to be hidden so that it didn't look like a safe. Then we had to bolt the safe to the floor, put alarms in the system, alarm the doors. Now we have to put in bulletproof windows. And this is in a pharmacy that has drugs that are worth way more than the MDMA, just you know, all over the place with less security. But we are resolving the situation, and eventually we'll be able to start.
But then why do it here in Vancouver then? Aren't there other places that it might be easier for you to conduct these studies?
Well, the most important thing is it's MDMA-assisted psychotherapy, and the psychotherapy is more important than the MDMA. And in Vancouver, there are two outstanding therapists. Psychiatrist is one, and the other is a therapist that we believe could do an excellent job working with people with PTSD in the Vancouver area. So we've gone to where the therapists are, and we're trying to open up psychedelic research for the first time in Canada in about 40 years.
Oh, well, you know what? It's a fascinating topic, Rick, so keep us posted and let us know how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, we're very close. I think we're a couple months, hopefully, from being able to start.
All right, we'll talk to you soon then.
Thank you for paying attention and letting me share my story.
Well, thanks for your time. That's Rick Doblin, the president and founder of the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, talking about taking the active ingredient in ecstasy and actually using it for other things, such as treating people who have post-traumatic stress disorder. All right, lots more still to come. When we come back, we'll be talking with Leonard Krogh, the NDP justice critic, about the backlog in the courts and what can be done about that. The major news to one is coming up next. Stay with us.